Chapter 4. It later became clear that Daisy had now entered a new phase. Uncle Parker called it a morbid phase, but Aunt Celia insisted that it was an intimations of mortality phase. Under whatever label, what it meant, principally, was that Daisy was now holding funerals. Sometimes she held only one a day, at other times, several. It depended mainly on what she could find to bury. She took these ceremonies very seriously and tried as far as possible to dress for her part. On the present occasion, for instance, she had taken advantage of the disorganization in the kitchen to bear off a long Indian frock of Mrs. Bagthorpe's that was airing on a rail, and a striped tea towel. She was swathed in the frock and wore the towel on her head. She said that she thought her outfit looked religious, and that vicars always wore long frocks. What Daisy was burying, no one thought to inquire at the time, as the ceremony was almost complete when they all rushed out to see what was happening. They stopped, more or less in their tracks, at the sight of Daisy in her borrowed vestments. She was scattering earth into a small hole, and had real tears running down her face. There could be little doubt that this new phase was a serious one. "Goodbye, goodbye," she wailed, flinging the last fistfuls of earth into the grave. "Where are you gone now, poor little thing?" This question struck her audience as rhetorical, and no one attempted to offer a reply. "Darling child," cried Aunt Celia, and she swayed forward to embrace her daughter, thereby collecting a good deal of damp soil on her own frock, and inciting Mr. Bagthorpe's further wrath. "Ye gods," he exclaimed in disgust, "what more must I endure? That child, Russell, is in urgent need of treatment. You are mad. She is mad." Then, after a pause, "they are mad." He was declining the verb to deaf ears. "Come, Daisy," Grandma said. "You must not be upset. Come to my room, and you shall have some sugared almonds." Daisy instantly disengaged herself from her mother's embrace. "I can't come, Grandma Bag," she cried. "I've got to do the writing yet." The writing was, in fact, one of the parts of her burials that Daisy enjoyed most. It meant composing a fitting epitaph for each of her various victims. She was very original in her choice of monuments, as the Bagthorpes were later to discover, to their cost. Mr. Bagthorpe said that the people who ran Highgate Cemetery could learn a lot from her. On this occasion, she had appropriated a black non-stick baking sheet from Mrs. Fosdyke's cupboard, and intended to chalk on it. "You'll have to go away," she told them all. "I can't think and write poems when there's people there." They all obediently trooped back indoors, and Mr. Bagthorpe went straight into his study and banged the door. "Poor Henry, he has no panache," remarked Grandma. "I shall accept the offer of a cat, Russell." "Really?" Uncle Parker was nonplussed. "But do you really want to come and live at the Knoll?" "I do not intend to," she replied calmly, "though I thank you for the invitation." "Correct me if I am wrong," said Uncle Parker, "but I was under the distinct impression that Henry laid down..." "I care nothing for Henry and his idle threats," Grandma told him. "Next week his Aunt Lucy is coming to visit. He is hoping, as you will know, to figure largely in her will. If he is seen as a man who drives helpless and aging female relatives out into the night, he will not receive a penny. Henry can be discounted. I shall have a cat, and I shall stop here." "But, Mother," protested Mrs. Bagthorpe weakly, "you always said that Thomas was irreplaceable and unique." She feared, as did her whole family, that Thomas had not been unique, and that a ginger Tom quite as hateful and toothy would be produced. "Time heals," Grandma said sanctimoniously. "I shall accept a substitute. I shall probably call him Thomas II. I shall establish a dynasty." "You'll have to train him to do something, Grandma," Rosie told her. "Father said we'd all got to do something." "Do I take it that Henry has gone off again at one of his unaccountable tangents?" asked Uncle Parker. "Oh, Russell, it is dreadful," Mrs. Bagthorpe told him. "Henry has become quite unhinged at the sight of his latest bank statement, on which a large number of noughts had been printed in error. He has decided that we must become self-sufficient. He intends to till the soil and buy chickens and cook everything in straw. It is dreadful. Cheer up, Laura. 10 to 1, the whole thing'll have blown over in a couple of days, Uncle Parker inaccurately forecast. You know, Henry, who better? Where, by the way, is the ubiquitous Mrs. Fosdyke?
Gone home, William said glumly. Father told her to take the afternoon off.
And I've got to make a blancmange, put in Tess disgustedly. And we've all got to live on rhubarb and beetroot until something else comes up, wailed Rosie. Henry has said that we must dispense with Mrs. Fosdyke's services, Mrs. Bagthorpe informed him. But I am absolutely against it. On this point I shall remain quite adamant. Without Mrs. Fosdyke, there would be no Stella Bright.
Well, well.
Uncle Parker was by now impressed by the way things were going. Henry is the last person on earth I should have thought of as self-sufficient. We must hope that the novelty will soon pall on him. In the meantime, Celia and myself will be delighted to slip you the odd food parcel, and so forth. They all thanked him fervently. We must now be on our way, Uncle Parker said. We must find a second Thomas. Outside, Daisy seemed to be winding up her service. She was singing All Things Bright and Beautiful. But cannot darling Daisy stop with me? Asked Grandma. Aunt Celia was not in favor of this. I cannot abandon my only child to a man who is raving, she declared, and to who knows what unwholesome diet.
Nonsense, Celia, Grandma said sharply. Henry is not raving. He is merely temporarily deranged, as he often is.
And I do not imagine that we shall be reduced to a diet of rhubarb and beetroot in the immediate future. Surely the deep freeze and the larder are adequately stocked, Laura.
Of course, replied Mrs. Bagthorpe. As a matter of fact, I removed a chicken from the deep freeze only this morning, and shall casserole it tomorrow.
The younger Bagthorpes cheered considerably at this intelligence. Daisy will enjoy Mother's company, Celia, dearest, Uncle Parker told her. He had been subjected to a continuous procession of funerals in the past few days, and was ready for a rest from it. Daisy herself then trotted in. She quickly pulled off the borrowed frock and tea towel and seemed all at once businesslike again.
That was a lovely funeral, she told everyone. Poor little thing.
Had the Bagthorpes not been in so benumbed a state, they might have made inquiries as to whom or what Daisy had in fact been interring. When they did make the discovery, they were unanimous in heartily wishing her dead. On being asked whether she would like to stop at Unicorn House for a few days, she assented vigorously.
"You can help me with my funerals, Grandma Bag," she offered generously. "You can even dig."
She waved a large, mud-covered serving spoon she had evidently also abstracted, while the rest were preoccupied and off their guard.
"You can help me sow seeds, Daisy," said Rosie, who was jealous of Daisy's friendship with Grandma. "Then, when they're grown, you can help me pick things."
"Are you not being a little optimistic?" said Tess. "I know of no seeds other than cress that can be sown and harvested within the week. However, I have a paranormal experiment I wish to conduct, and will use your seeds as guinea pigs, so to speak."
The Parkers then departed, and the unholy alliance went up to Grandma's room for a conference. Mr. Bagthorpe emerged from his study shortly afterward, brandishing a rota he had drawn up. During his absence, Mrs. Bagthorpe had told her offspring that she thought it best if, at any rate for the time being, they cooperated with him.
"Russell may be right," she said hopefully, "and this will turn out to be a mere whim, or a passing phase." Mrs. Bagthorpe had a strong tendency to positive thinking, and believed touchingly in its power. The thoroughness with which Mr. Bagthorpe had already plotted his plan for survival did not strike any of the others as looking much like a whim. It bore all the hallmarks of an all-out Bagthorpian obsession.
This book is doomed.